stories the U.S. Senate throws its support behind a major weapons sales to Saudi Arabia that includes advanced missiles. Washington imposes fresh sanctions against a number of Iranian entities and nationals. Tehran says the move will not create any leverage in the Vienna talks. Also in headlines, the Russian president says Moscow is concerned about NATO's growing presence near his country's borders amid tensions over Ukraine. Welcome to the program. The U.S. Senate backs sales of advanced weaponry to Saudi Arabia following the kingdom's plea for a resupply of its military equipment. The $650 million arms package sales comes despite opposition from the Biden administration. Democratic Senator Bernie Sanders also warned that exporting more missiles to Saudi Arabia will escalate the conflict between the Saudi-led coalition and Yemen. Earlier, Saudi Arabia appealed to the U.S. and its allies in Europe and the Persian Gulf for resupplies of weaponry. Riyadh claims it needs missiles for defensive purposes while the kingdom pushes ahead with its devastating war on Yemen. The years-long onslaught has killed hundreds of thousands of Yemenis, that is, and displaced millions of others. Local media report a fresh airstrike by the Saudi-led coalition on the northern Yemeni city of Sa'ada. Three people have been killed in the strike that targeted the Sa'ad district. The attack is the latest in a bout of Saudi airstrikes on Yemen. Saudi warplanes have conducted over 130 strikes on Sana'a and other major Yemeni cities over the past 5 days. Meanwhile, the Yemeni army says they have downed a U.S.-made spy plane. Army spokesman Yahya Sari says the aircraft was targeted in the Juba area of Ma'arib province. Iran warns the United States that imposing more sanctions will not create any leverage in the Vienna talks. Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh says such moves show anything but seriousness and goodwill. He noted that Washington's so-called maximum pressure policy against Tehran runs contrary to any diplomatic breakthrough. The comments come after the U.S. Treasury Department announced that as fresh sanctions on a number of Iranian entities and nationals over alleged human rights violations. Tehran and the other signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal have so far held 7 rounds of talks in Vienna with the aim of removing anti-Iran sanctions. The latest round of negotiations is now in recess and will resume on Thursday. Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian says the U.S. must remove all its sanctions if it wishes to return to the 2015 nuclear deal known as the JCPOA. In an opinion piece in the Russian daily Kommersant, Amir Abdollahian noted that Iran continued to fully comply by JCPOA even a year after the U.S. unilateral withdrawal. He said his country was hoping for effective measures from the three European signatories, namely Britain, France, and Germany, but they failed to take that as the right standpoint. Iran's top diplomats said Tehran will only return to full compliance of the 2015 nuclear deal if the U.S. guarantees that the past will not repeat itself. He insisted that Iran will not accept anything beyond the JCPOA and that negotiations cannot go on forever. Political commentator Robert Fantina says the United States is doing Israel's bidding by imposing more sanctions on Iran.
It's total hypocrisy. It's playing up to whatever Israel wants. Israel does not want a renewal or reentry of the JCPOA. And so the Zionist leaders in the United States, Biden, Blinken, and others, are fulfilling their commitment to Israel, ignoring what's best for the United States, ignoring what's best for the Middle East, certainly ignoring what's best for the people of Iran. And this is the key to the situation. Biden, after becoming president, even said that Donald Trump was wrong to withdraw from JCPOA. Biden could re-enter the JCPOA today. He could have at any time since he was inaugurated in January by simply removing the sanctions, at which point the European signatories would begin trading again with Iran, and Iran would have scaled back its nuclear enrichment activities. It's a simple procedure, but the Biden administration will not do it because it doesn't fit in with its geopolitical goals in the Middle East.
Iran's deputy ambassador to the UN warns against any act of piracy targeting Iranian oil. Zahra Ershadi says attempts to confiscate tankers carrying Iran's oil are the results of illegal policies, which have been fueling tensions over the past year. She says U.S. sanctions have limited the freedom of movement for Iranian vessels. Eshadi explained that the move has, in turn, disrupted the supply of basic goods such as food, medicine, and medical equipment to Iranian people. Tankers carrying Iranian oil have been repeatedly targeted over the past few months. The latest incident took place in late October when Iranian forces blocked an attempt by the U.S. military to seize a vessel in the Sea of Oman. A virtual summit between U.S. President Joe Biden and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin is now over. The two sides say Ukraine dominated the discussion. During the meeting, Putin complained about NATO's growing presence near Russian borders. He also asked for legal guarantees that a military alliance will not expand further east. Russian president expressed concern about what he called NATO's dangerous attempts to develop Ukrainian territory. Putin told his U.S. counterpart it was wrong to put the blame for the tensions over Ukraine on Russia. Biden, for his part, expressed concern about Moscow's actions with regard to Kyiv. He said Russia will face strong economic sanctions in case of a military escalation against Ukraine. The White House says it has given the Kremlin zero concessions about Ukraine.
I'm not going to characterize President Putin's side of the conversation and or go into details in terms of what they discuss, because I think they need to have that space to be able to have a robust exchange. But I will tell you clearly and directly, he made no such commitments or concessions. He stands by the proposition that countries should be able to freely choose who they associate with.
Jake Sullivan says if Russia invades Ukraine, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which carries Russian gas to Europe, will be suspended. Washington and Moscow have agreed to continue talks on Ukraine. In the past weeks, Russia has been accused of preparing for an incursion into its southern neighbor. Moscow has vehemently rejected that allegation, calling it hysteria. The Kremlin says the presence of Russian soldiers near Ukraine is in response to a troop buildup on the other side of the border. Australia joins the U.S. in diplomatically boycotting the 2022 Winter Games in Beijing. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says government officials will not accompany Australian athletes in the upcoming Winter Olympics. He says China has failed to respond to several issues raised by Canberra, including alleged human rights abuses. A day earlier, Washington also announced a diplomatic boycott of the Winter Olympics, citing a similar pretext. The decision angered China, which warned that the U.S. will pay a price for its mistakes. Beijing says the U.S. is plotting to disrupt the international event, but will fail. The European countries are implementing different measures to deal with the coronavirus. Two out of every three Europeans are now fully vaccinated, but stricter measures may be arriving in some countries to force the non-vaccinated into compliance. Ramin Mazahiri is in Paris.
The coronavirus continues to provoke sharply different responses across Europe. There has been much concern over the new Omicron variant, but markets are surging on the bet that worries about Omicron have been as overblown as they were for the Delta variant. France has had perhaps the strictest coronavirus measures in the West, but the government surprisingly announced only a handful of new minor measures and no new lockdown. Corporate profits and economic inequality continue to surge unabated during the corona era, and incumbent politicians may be thinking about this spring's election.
French businesses are accumulating a lot of debt because business conditions are far from optimal. We're going to see a lot of bankruptcies all down the line because sales are not rising, even though costs are. We need a long-term logic, which is much more efficient, and even if we decide on even stricter sanitation controls.
The government also said schools will not be closed early for vacation, and they rejected a vaccination order for children, at least for now. France may have been swayed by a new report which found that during the first 15 months of the epidemic, not one healthy child between the ages of 5 to 18 died of COVID in Germany, Europe's largest country.
France's vaccination rate is now almost 80%. Prior to the pandemic, France was considered the most vaccine-skeptical nation in the world, but the introduction of a corona pass, which almost totally isolates the unvaccinated, has forced people into compliance.
Around Europe, lockdowns are back in Austria, despite massive protests. Germany is debating a vaccine mandate. Italy has moved to a new super health pass. And even though two-thirds of Europe is fully vaccinated, stricter measures may soon be arriving, regardless of the impact of Omicron. Perhaps the only certainty is that no government seems able to please all their citizens.
France's government has had a very poor strategy. For example, we provided free corona tests for a long time, but it was a major error because it cost us 6 billion euros. This money could have been used to create an actual screening strategy, which could have slowed the progression of the virus.
After 21 months of corona domination, what remains most unknown is when things will go back to normal. Europeans, especially non-vaccinated ones, are increasingly saying that time may be never. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
European Union health ministers meet in Brussels to discuss rising COVID-19 cases and growing measures, or pressure that is, on the bloc's health services. Vaccine hesitancy is being singled out as the driving force behind hospital admissions, deaths, and new restrictions. Jerome Hughes reports from the Belgian capital.
Figures have just emerged which show that less than 55% of the population in six EU nations have received a COVID-19 vaccine, despite plenty being available. Experts say vaccine hesitancy is the main reason behind rising coronavirus cases, hospitalizations, deaths, and the reintroduction of restrictive measures across the 27-country bloc. EU health ministers have been meeting in Brussels to take stock of the crisis.
So is this not a massive failure from the EU? Should the EU not be putting much more of its effort into trying to convince people to take the vaccines?
The EU citizens have moved forward, and we have over 66% of the total population vaccinated and 77% of the adult. But we mustn't stop.
Growing pressure on hospitals means that non-COVID patients are being neglected, and those without private health insurance are falling between the cracks.
Our member organisations are reporting on a daily basis of some of the barriers to access to healthcare, increasing co-payments, difficulties in accessing medicines, specialists, etc. This simply cannot go on.
As EU health ministers met on Tuesday, so too did the bloc's finance ministers. The message was both old and new risks to the EU economy are materialising.
Notably, the growing case numbers and reintroduction of restrictions, global supply chains, and the rise of inflation.
Bulgaria and Romania stand out as having the lowest vaccination rates in the EU. Fears over new variants have been heightened by the Omicron mutation. At the start of the pandemic, EU nations closed their borders and turned their backs on Italy, which was buckling under the pressure. It was left to Russia to fly in emergency medical supplies. It's a story the bloc's leaders never talk about. In a veiled reference to it here, health ministers say there must be better cooperation between member states when the next crisis emerges. Jerome Hughes, the Council of the EU, Brussels.
The brother of former Afghan President Ashraf Ghani criticizes the U.S. for the current situation in his country. Heshmat Ghani says Iran is the only regional country that has the capacity to help Afghanistan. Heshmat, who is also a political and economic expert, has also accused the U.S. of creating a system and then destroying it. He says Washington's deal with the Taliban during former President Donald Trump had made it crystal clear that the group would soon assume power in Afghanistan. He further says the current situation in his country cannot be improved without Iran's help. The Taliban took the helm of Afghanistan in mid-August following a hasty withdrawal of foreign forces, including U.S. troops. They have, however, faced many challenges in governing the country. Heshmat Ghani says the group suffers divisions among its own members. A report from London now. A whistleblower who worked in the UK's foreign ministry during the fall of Kabul to the Taliban in August has made damning claims about government failures during the withdrawal from Afghanistan that could have cost many Afghan lives. He alleges junior officials were left to make hundreds of life and death decisions and that the UK's top diplomat at the time failed to see the urgency of the situation.
It was a chaotic end to a 20-year-long U.S.-led occupation of Afghanistan.
thousands of Afghans who had worked with British forces appealed to be airlifted out of their country. Months after that shambolic evacuation, inflammatory claims about how the UK Foreign Office responded as the Taliban took over Kabul. 39 devastating pages of evidence provided by junior diplomat Rafael Marshall. Among the allegations, Marshall says up to 150,000 people applied for evacuation, but fewer than 5% got any assistance. No member of the team working on the evacuation requests had any knowledge of Afghanistan, and that Foreign Office staff stuck to the 8-hour shift culture during the emergency.
The truth of the matter is Afghanistan was a huge defeat for the Americans and for the British, and they didn't expect the government to fall so quickly. They didn't expect the Taliban to take control. The last thing they wanted to do was really bring attention to what went on there, and the evidence from this whistleblower makes that absolutely clear.
He reserves his most stinging criticism for former Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab, holidaying in Greece at the time, for dragging his feet on responding to the crisis.
We had a process in place to check two things.
The former Foreign Secretary has defended his decisions, and we all remember these images. Marshall claims Prime Minister Boris Johnson personally intervened to secure the evacuation of animals in the care of a British charity worker at the expense of Afghans at imminent risk.
Marshall claims also that an email he wrote to his superiors warning that people could die if things didn't improve was criticized for being shrill. That claim and the others mentioned in this report raise serious questions about the dysfunction at the heart of the British government with deadly consequences. Saeed Khurizah, London.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Exiled American whistleblower Edward Snowden, whose leaked documents revealed that in 2007 the Israeli regime was flagged as a top espionage threat against the U.S. government, went further, saying in July that NSO groups industry should not exist. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jessica Corbett, journalist. This article is titled Spyware Created by Israeli Regime Firm Used to Hack U.S. Officials' iPhones. Stay tuned for more. Multiple news outlets revealed recently that Apple notified at least 11 U.S. State Department officials that their iPhones were recently hacked by an unknown party or parties with a spyware developed by the private Israeli regime firm NSO Group. The bombshell, first reported by Reuters, comes after Apple sued NSO Group last month in an effort to protect iPhone users from its Pegasus spyware, which the Israeli regime company claims to only sell to government law enforcement and intelligence agencies, and was the focus of a major reporting project earlier this year. Citing multiple unnamed sources, the Washington Post and Reuters explained that U.S. State Department employees based in Uganda or elsewhere in East Africa were targeted over several months, and the intrusions represent the widest known hacks of U.S. officials through NSO technology.
According to the Reuters, a senior Biden administration official speaking on condition he not be identified said the threat to U.S. personnel abroad was one of the reasons the administration was cracking down on companies such as NSO and pursuing new global discussion about spying limits. The official added that they have seen systematic abuse in multiple countries involving NSO's Pegasus spyware. The National Security Council said in a statement reported by the Post that we have been acutely concerned that commercial spyware like NSO Group software poses a serious counterintelligence and security risk to U.S. personnel, which is one of the reasons why the Biden-Harris administration has placed several companies involved in the development and proliferation of these tools on the Department of Commerce's entity list, unquote. Spokespeople for Apple and the State Department declined to comment to Reuters, though the latter also noted that the Commerce Department recently added NSO Group to entity list based on a determination that they developed and supplied the spyware to foreign governments that used this tool to maliciously target government officials, journalists, business people, activists, academics, and embassy workers. While officials at the Ugandan embassy in Washington, D.C. also did not comment, the Zionist regime embassy in the United States Capitol gave a statement to Reuters addressing the fact that the Zionist regime's Ministry of War approves export licenses for the spyware company. The Israeli regime spokesperson said cyber products like the one mentioned are supervised and licensed to be exported to governments only for purposes related to counterterrorism and severe crimes, adding the licensing provisions are very clear, and if these claims are true, it is a severe violation of these provisions. An NSO Group spokesperson told the news agency that the relevant accounts were canceled, and if an internal investigation finds that these actions indeed happened with NSO's tools, the involved customers will be terminated permanently and legal actions will take place. The representative added that the company will cooperate with any relevant government authority and present the full information we will have, unquote. Facebook sued NSO in 2019, claiming the Zionist regime's firm's spyware was used on its messaging service, WhatsApp. Will Cathcart, head of WhatsApp, tweeted recently, "We have been calling NSO a national security threat for years. This reporting shows again why we need to hold NSO accountable for their actions and why governments need to support increased security online." John Scott Railton, a senior researcher at the Citizen Lab at the University of Toronto, also responded to the revelations on Twitter, saying that NSO Group has been an in plain sight national security threat for years, and it is embarrassing that it took a private company to warn them. He asked, "Are their victims not notified by Apple? How about the overseas posted personnel using Androids? Does the State Department know now? A multi-agency investigation is immediately needed." Senator Ron Wyden similarly told the Post that companies that enable their customers to hack U.S. government employees are a threat to America's national security and should be treated as such by the government. Wyden added, "I want to be sure the State Department and the rest of the federal government has the tools to detect hacks and respond to them quickly." last month, Apple filed a lawsuit in a California-based U.S. district court accusing NSO Group of violating its terms and conditions, as well as state and federal laws. Apple is seeking a permanent injunction to ban the firm from using its devices, services, or software. That suit came after the Pegasus Project, an investigation into NSO's spyware, published in July by more than 80 journalists from 17 media organizations in 10 countries. Coordinated by Forbidden Stories with the technical support of Amnesty International, the project focused on leak of 50,000 phone numbers of potential surveillance targets, including activists, heads of state, and journalists around the world. The Pegasus Project has spurred worldwide calls for an immediate moratorium on the export, sale, transfer, and use of such spyware. Exiled American whistleblower Edward Snowden, whose leaked documents revealed that in 2007 the Zionist regime was flagged as a top espionage threat against the U.S. government, went further, saying in July that NSO Group's industry should not exist.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and for your information, once when Hazrat Zainab Kubra, peace be upon her, described a strange dream she had to her beloved grandfather, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, the Holy Prophet replied, "Oh, my daughter, that tree is me who would shortly leave this world. The branches of the tree are your father Ali and your mother Fatima Zahra, peace be upon them. And the twigs are your brothers Hassan and Hussein, peace be upon them. They will all depart this world before you do, and you will suffer their separation and loss."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
Allah, Allah.
humanity. Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program for humanity. We are looking at human rights from the scope and from the perspective of Amir al-Mu'mineen wa Sayyid al-Muwahideen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, and we were specifically looking at the right of the family. Now, previously we mentioned that Amir al-Mu'mineen states and highlights the rights of the father and the son and the rights of one on other. And obviously, we kept it simple and short. Another thing that Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi highlights, which is a very delicate matter that sometimes, you know, families in our modern day might have to face. And obviously, this issue was happening back then and continues these days, that when it comes to the father and the son. Now, as a son, I work, I earn a living, I have an income. My father might do the same, my father might have an income too. And sometimes, no, my father doesn't have income, I have an income, or vice versa. Now, do I have the right to go to my father, take money from him without his permission or not? Or does my father has a right to come take money from my, take money from me without my permission? How does that? Because this is a delicate matter when it comes to money, and you see a lot of families break down in our modern age because of the issue of money. Now, Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he also puts the father at the top of the hierarchy. So he says the father maintains everything. He says, when he was asked about a man taking money from his son, from his kids, he says, يَأْكُلُ مِنْهُ مَا يَشَأْ بِغَيْرِ سَرَفٍ. He has the right to take from it as much as he like, obviously without, you know, wasting, without just, you know, spending the money for no good reason. He has the right to take as much as he want for his livelihood, for his needs, as long as we are not crossing the boundaries of wasting, of trying to just spend the money for no good reason. So he was very clear in that. And now, as a son, having heard Amir al-Mu'mineen say so, I say on my head, on my eyes, as we say, my father can come to me, take my credit card, my bank account, and he can take as much money as he likes. And I would not object to that. Then he says, in one of his letters, in one of his books, he says, إِنَّ الْوَلَدَ لَا يَأْخُدُ مِنْ مَالِ وَالِدِهِ شَيْئًا إِلَّا بِإِذْنَهِ. As for a son, you have absolutely no right to go take money from your father's purse, from your father's credit card, from your father's bank account, unless you have permission to do so. Without permission, you have no business doing such a thing. Why? Because Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, he's trying to keep the hierarchy in place, keeping that respect happening. As a son, obviously you need your father's permission. If you break that trust, if you break this connection, then we're going to have what? A problem. And he says, وَالْوَالْدُ يَأْخُدُ مِنْ مَالِ إِبْنِهِ مَا يَشَاءُ. On the other hand, the father can come and take whatever he wants from his son. So that's just maintaining the order of things. My father, he gave me my life. He gave me everything that I have is because of him. This is exactly the words of Imam Sajjad. Huwa asluk wa anta fur'uh. He is the root, you are the branch. Whatever you have, Imam Sajjad says, whatever you have, it will not be possible if it wasn't for him. Therefore, I submit to that fact, that me, my existence, and everything I own is due to my father, thanks to my father. Therefore, he has the right to come and take whatever he wants from me. Can I do the same to him? Of course I can't. Let us take a short break, then we come right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. Amir al-Mu'minin salamullahi alayhi. Then he moves on and he expands the circle of the family. So it is not limited to only the parents. He tries to, you know, create a bigger circle where he includes the relatives as well. Because obviously one family is one part of the society, another family is another part of society, and we increase. So then Amir al-Mu'minin salamullah alayhi, he talks about the benefits of having to mingle with people of your own kin, you know, your relation, cousins, brothers, I don't know, sisters, nephews, or what have you. He says you need to come together and keep this link and the relationship between you. Why all Amir al-Mu'mineen? Why? Why is this important? He says, in such an action itself. Look at the benefit. He says, مُثْرَاتٌ فِي الْمَالِ وَمُنْسَاتٌ فِي الْأَجَلِ. If you keep your relationship with your family, two things will happen. One, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will increase your wealth, and this is something that we want as human beings. And He will delay your death. And that's the second thing that human beings want. In this life itself, there are two things that me and you, we constantly seek on a daily basis: to live long and to have more money. And Amir al-Mu'minin says, well, that is simple. All you have to do is share with your relatives, go to them, give them a phone call, ask about them, give them a visit. If you do so, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will increase your wealth and will prolong your life. As simple as that. When he talks about the Jahiliyyah era, when he talks about the pagans and how they lived, he says, Al-arhamu maqtu'a. Back in the day, before Islam, relationships were severed, were cut. People don't used to care much about the relation. Wal-gharatu mashnuna. And they not only that, but they used to do what? They used to kill each other. They used to fight and go into war. Because back in the day, you would have a whole tribe consist of one family, and then you have another tribe consist of another family, and sometimes these two tribes are cousins. What happens between them? Not only the relationship between them is cut, but from time to time they invade one another. That was the pagan era. When Islam came, Islam changed that. So he included them to be one part, to be one unit. So then he says that you need to have this equality amongst you when it comes to you, your family, and other families that are related. In fact, when it comes to the entire area, city, community that you live in, you need to keep that. You need to maintain that. So he expands the circle even further. He says, مَنْ أَتَاهُ اللَّهَ مَالًا فَلْيَسَلْ بِهِ الْقَرَابَ. He who Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives him wealth, let him use it to get closer to his relatives. So sometimes you get close to your close relatives, and sometimes you have to get even closer to your further relatives. So the more you expand yourself from what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given you, the more Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will give you in return. So Amir al-Mu'minin salamullah alayhi from here, he's trying to maintain the right of the family, the right of relatives, be it far or be it close. And he expands that circle and he says, okay, if you do this and he does the same thing and everyone does the same thing, then we're going to have a very beautiful society that maintains the rights of one another. Thank you for listening and stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. رحمة أرسلته للعالمين وعلى آل النبي أجمعين فبهم نرجوك أحسن
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
With the Christmas season in full swing, hundreds have gathered on Spain's Gran Canaria island to watch stunning sand sculptures representing the birth of Christ. Eight sand artists from around the world have created these spectacular figures. It took them a week to complete the scenes. A huge sand wall is built around the sculptures to protect them. The island has been holding the event every year since 2006. The warm temperatures on the Spanish beach have helped attract a lot of visitors over Christmas. According to the organizers, at least 200,000 people have visited the exhibition in the past 15 years. A joyful day at an Australian zoo as a baby pygmy hippo is born. That's good news for the zoo staff because pygmy hippos are endangered species. Cambiri, the mother hippo, gave birth to the calf last month. It's her second calf and the first one was born in a Sydney zoo 4 years ago. The newborn is yet to be named. It sticks to the mum and follows her wherever she goes. The calf is spending most of its time out of the sight of the public, as for now it's learning to walk and swim. And the mum keeps a close eye on the calf at all times.
The first few days, she did not leave the calf's side, was very sedate, very quiet, and just looking after its every need. And only in the last sort of couple of days as she started to get a little bit more sleep in.
They are regarded as endangered animals because of illegal hunting and loss of habitat. Currently, less than 3,000 pygmy hippos are living in the wild.
Is it interesting to experience what Harry Potter went through at Hogwarts? Well, it could be, at least for students at a university in Pakistan kicking off a festival celebrating the fictional wizard. The students at Government College University made their 150-year-old campus look like the magical school created by British author J.K. Rowling. They put on costumes and set up decorations reminiscent of Hogwarts. The university's vice chancellor says the campus, with its vast halls and soaring archways, has always reminded the students of the fictional school.
Most of these youngsters, they grew up at the time when J.K. Rowling's work was being presented in the novels and then later on in the film. So that magical charm, that fantasy, they really enjoyed. They grew up reading that fantasy. And then when they come to Government College University and see these architecture, it reminds me of that Hogwarts that is being filmed in Harry Potter films.
The university official spoke proudly of what his students have done. They were themselves happy too, calling their experience fun. Others said it was unbelievable to be in Hogwarts. The festival also screened Pakistan's first fan-made Harry Potter film made and acted by the students. The Swedish city of Stockholm has launched its 31st annual Christmas competition of baking gingerbread.
There is a limited in space, so it's 40 centimeters by 40 centimeters, and everything you build, all the material need to be eatable. So you can build with different things, gingerbread of course, but also candies and other things, but you need to be able to eat it. So that's one of the rules as well.
Each year, the Gingerbread House competition, hosted by ArcDes Museum of Architecture and Design, has a theme for the designs. This year's theme is Together, attracting various interpretations of the topic. So far, the entries have included the Titanic, the famous coffee shop from the American TV show Friends, an igloo, and the Berlin Wall, all entirely edible. The event, which has been running for 31 years, is designed for all kinds of creators, such as children, young people, adults, amateurs, and professionals. The Tasty exhibition runs until January the 5th. A Palestinian teacher has developed an assistant for himself nicknamed Mr. Robot, bringing joy to the children of a school in Gaza. Mr. Robot teaches the children of Al-Basma School about electric circuits and helps them memorize their lessons. Mr. Robot moves freely in the classroom, speaking Arabic to students and communicating with them as a friend. The teacher creating it says the aim was to stimulate creativity and innovation in his classroom.
Mr. Robot, as his name suggests, is the teacher's assistant and not his replacement. He assists in the education process by asking questions and giving answers, greeting students and interacting with them in all aspects of a class.
The teacher says at first students reacted to it in a strange way, but later on they said it was like a dream come true for them. Local engineers say the robot is the first of its kind in the Gaza Strip, where electrical tools and components are scarce.
Artificial intelligence has found its way into several aspects of our lives. Now, a French research team is working on a project to provide fishermen with intelligent trawls that could help them sort out fishes before they are brought to the boats.
The objective of the project is to try to provide a support tool for fishermen, because at the moment, when they put their fishing gear in the water, a trawl net is like a large net. It is towed behind the vessel for several hours without having knowledge of what enters the trawl net in real time. Namely, is it species that are targeted by the fishermen or not targeted?
The trawl has a camera that can capture footage underwater, which is then analyzed by a microcomputer using artificial intelligence. If targeted fishes are detected, the trawl will switch to fishing mode. But when there are no targeted species, it will switch back to flight mode to avoid having an impact on the seabed. Another feature of this technology is to identify and classify pelagic species. For instance, horse mackerel can be displayed in blue on the screen, while the sardines are shown in pink.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
If you enjoy nighttime adventures, then this park in Paris is just for you. Decorated with colorful lighting, the venue gives you a real feeling of life-size sculptures depicting dinosaurs and other prehistoric animals. In this exhibition, dubbed Evolution on the Path of Lights, visitors can walk through tunnels formed by some of the sculptures. They are made of paper, steel, and lights. More than 100 sculptures light up like lanterns across the park. These include well-known favorites of kids, such as Triceratops and T-Rex. Some huge lanterns also represent insects and vertebrates that walked on the planet millions of years ago. The exhibition's director says the goal is to raise awareness and educate the public about biodiversity in the past and present.
In Thailand, monkeys climbing on piles of fruits and vegetables in central Thailand is not due to a mess, though. It is actually an annual event called the Monkey Festival in Lopburi Province. The long-tailed monkeys, known as macaques, feast on 2 tons of fruits and vegetables in Lopburi. That is the capital city of the province with the same name. Locals say the event is a symbolic way to thank the cute animals for doing their part in drawing tourists to their town. This year's festival took place after a 2-year halt due to the pandemic.
Today is the 33rd time that we held this event. This year under the theme of Wheelchair Monkey Party,
where we organizers will donate 100 wheelchairs to people in need. I would say the event is very successful. Many Thais and tourists are visiting.
Apuri has been holding the annual festival for its monkey population for decades now. COVID restrictions meant last year's party was missing its usual crowd of spectators. However, this year the humans were back in force with more than 100 turning out to see the monkeys. Historical monuments have many duplicates made by enthusiasts around the world. India's Taj Mahal is not an exception. But the one you're about to see right now is not just a physical copy. It shares the spirit of Taj Mahal as well. This mini replica is located in the city of Burhanpur, some 800 kilometers away from the magnificent Taj Mahal itself. It has a love story behind it too, just as Taj Mahal does. Anand Parkash Choksi, a teacher, has built this replica as a gift to his spouse. It took Choksi 3 years to build the four-bedroom house that is decorated by artisans from Agra, where Taj Mahal is located. He says that he has made the replica to show his love and spread the message of peace. Taj Mahal was built by a Mughal Emperor Shah Jahan in memory of his wife Mumtaz Mahal, back in the 17th century. Now, for those interested in ancient history, Egypt has unveiled a renovated ancient road dating back some 3,400 years in a spectacular nighttime ceremony. This historical corridor is nearly 3 kilometers long and connects the temples of Karnak and Luxor in the center of the southern city of Nile. The stone road, also known as the Avenue of Sphinxes or the Ramza Road, features over 1,000 traditional sphinxes and ram-headed statues on its sides. The site was buried under layers of sand until it was discovered back in the late 1940s. Since then, the path has undergone decades of excavation efforts, but experts say that many statues have been completely damaged.
Sphinx statues were completely damaged and in very bad condition because wrong restoration works were conducted in the 1960s and 1970s. In the previous century, they used wrong materials for the restorations. Now we're using internationally recognized materials for the restoration works.
Egypt has described the site as the largest open museum in the world. The new attraction aims to help revive the country's tourism industry. The sector has been hit hard due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Robots now helping as teaching aids in some Korean kindergartens. The pint-sized machines do everything they can, from singing to reciting stories. The robots, being as tall as nearly 25 centimeters, can also dance, have sing songs, and even teach kung fu moves. That gives children fun as they mimic the robots' push-ups and one-legged balances. It's also good for the kids' creativity. In fact, that's the purpose of sending the robots to hundreds of kindergartens in Seoul, beginning from August. Each robot has a camera and its helmet, making it possible to take photos and send them to a tablet for viewing. Teachers say they love their new ways.
The robots are helpful when at times it's hard for me to read everyone's stories. The robots can read out stories in a very entertaining way by switching voices accordingly.
For now, the robots are being used as part of a pilot program, but Korean education officials hope to use them more widely, although they say the machines would not replace teachers. The officials believe having this experience in nursery schools will have a lasting effect throughout the kids' youth and as adults.
Spacecraft are used for a range of purposes, from observation to exploration and navigation. But this specific spacecraft was designed for a totally different purpose, to smash into an asteroid. In a first-of-its-kind mission, NASA launched the vehicle, Dot Dot, from a Space Force base in California. The mission will take 10 months to travel to a pair of asteroids. It will eventually crash into one of two rocks and see if it can change its course. Just before impact, DOT will deploy a small satellite to take photos of the crash. Space organizations around the world are eager to find ways of countering objects that might head towards the Earth. The good news, though, is that for now, none of those objects are a threat. Old manuscripts are precious and can sometimes fetch attractive sums of money, but this one has gone far beyond, as it's a really rare handwriting belonging to a world-famous scientist. This manuscript was sold for a whopping $13 million at an auction at Christie's in Paris, but would you still be surprised if we told you that it belongs to no one but the great physicist of our time, Albert Einstein? Einstein did not have a habit of keeping drafts, and this is one of only two manuscripts that have survived. Einstein wrote the 54-page document in the early 1900s in Zurich, Switzerland, and his colleague Michel Besseau has preserved it since then. The document contains Einstein's preparatory work for his signature achievement, the theory of general relativity. Einstein's letters have set records twice before, but for much lower prices.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. At least 223 Palestinians were killed during those protests, which began on March 30, 2018 and concluded in December 2019. 7 persons with disabilities were killed during the protests, according to Al-Haq, a Palestinian human rights group. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Maureen Claire Murphy, journalist. This article is titled, "The Israeli Regime Kills People with Disabilities." Stay tuned for more.